So it was probably University of Chicago, Oregon, Fermi Lab, and Caltech. That's what I remember of the people at that time. What I don't remember, and you need to find out, is when the other members of CDF came in. I know some of the stories. I don't know when Lee Helloway came in. Part of this group was always Wisconsin with Klein.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the group of people.
And where's Lee Helloway from?
Urbana.
Okay.
But I think he came in quite late. You could just ask him.
Mm-hmm.
When he started, it'd be fun to know some of these things.
Yeah.
During that time, some really nice work was done. Jeffrey Fox was the one that realized that, from Caltech, was the one that realized that you had to have much better granularity in the detector than UA1 was having. You had to have small power limited modules. And that pointed us in the right direction. In fact, there's a lot of work done. They actually wrote papers on, did the Monte Carlo studies of how you'd find the top meson and things like that. So it's nice stuff, and they got the number of modules about right and things like that. But we didn't know how to build that into the detector because this made things very, very complicated. So the calorimeter that Peter designed, I think that did have a lot of small cells in it, but the magnetic detector did not.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we had this sort of pseudo shootout and decided that you had to have a magnet basically to give you the sign of the leptons. But a lot of physics was done knowing whether you had like sign mu's or unlike sign mu's, things like that, that you didn't know what you were going to get into, and so although you didn't need the momentum to reconstruct events particularly, you did need the sign of things in order to understand the physics that you were doing. And there was the question of the W, and the magnet helps you with identification of the electron from the W, although we know now that would have been terribly easy and that you don't really need it. At the time, we didn't think you needed it, but one didn't know how hard that problem was going to be. It turns out W identification is trivial. So we fixed the design to be a magnetic detector. And at that time, it was only the central detector, what would correspond now with the thing that rolls in and out of the hall. Bob Walker and I both felt that with the small group that we had at that time, not Jimmy Walker, but Bob Walker, that we couldn't cope with designing anything more than just the central detector, and that eventually we would have to understand what happened in the forward and backward direction, but we didn't have good designs for the central part, so we just we left that. So let's see now what happens next.
They were working on a formal design report.
We made a formal design report for that central detector, and presented it to the PAC, I think. In retrospect, I don't think it was very good. Oh, we had a The other thing we had was a summer workshop that's on choirs, and so a lot was starting to be known about what detectors should look like. I think we were heavily
this
influenced.
This up to about 1980?
No, I think.
Was Leon director?
Yeah. Yes.
Was it held here?
No. Okay, let me try and get this straight. But we made a design for the central detector that was the cost of it was about $25 million or something mm-hmm. like that. That was actually published and put out. Leon was director. At the same time, so many things happening, and I don't know what the times are.
Right.
The source started, okay? Because out of the electron cooling ring, a scenario grew for making a P-bar source.
Mm-hmm.
And that was within Leon's guidelines, because we wanted a source to do P-bar P in the Tevatron. And and it wasn't a very good design for the source. Leon got a committee together that told him that, so it was a lousy design and we could do better. And why didn't he start over?
Mm.
And the reason this is important for the detector part is that the DOE never took us seriously at all. They said, if you don't have a source and you don't have a real program here, why are you worrying us about a detector? And so Wallenmar, although we had plans and things for detectors, Wallenmar always treated it as a peripheral activity that he didn't have to pay any attention to.
Mm.
And I think that in a way that was right, because you did have a good source. Leon had taken away the PP thing, which he could have done without a source, and said we would do PRP, but then the source was flaky, and so the detector at that point didn't make sense. So Wallenmar put screws on the lab to, I think in a sense, to get the source part right. So Leon had a committee, they told him the source is no good, go back and do it again. And at that point...
You were an outside committee?
Yeah. Tigner may have been head of that committee.
Mm-hmm.
Richter, I think, was on it. Matt Sands was on it, I remember. They just said, look, you can do a lot better. At best, you're only matching CERN,
mm-hmm.
and you have a much more powerful facility here.
Was this the same sort of committee, like the three wise men? I mean, did Leon keep relying on McDaniel, Sands, and Richter, Sands, and McDaniel to give him guidance?
Yeah, those... But I think this source committee was different than that.
Okay.
I think it was Tigner that was head of that. I think Herman Grunder may have been on it.
Mm-hmm.
I would guess Matt was there. I don't know whether Boyce was on that or not. I would guess Richter would have been there, but maybe not. Anyway, it was a committee that really looked at
sorry.
It really looked at things. Is that on this chronology?
No, it's not on it.
A couple of people have mentioned this Tigner committee.
Add it.
And so I need to find out about that.
Right. Get the. This is subsequent to the preliminary design in May 79. That's the superconducting accelerator design report, and there's like a brief two-page mention of a detector of colliding beams.
Let's see. I know one way. At home, I've got some of those early design reports. I think some of this they got used up in the flood.
Oh no! What a loss. Well, I can.
But then you guys have all those things.
Yeah, I can bring up a copy and ask you about it sometime.
There was a. If you look at the first proposals for the source, whenever they were, they have electron. They have a scenario where you make P-bars. But high energy with our high energy beam, but electron cooling only works at low energy. So you have to decelerate the P bars. You make P bars best at 8 or 9 GeV. That's where you make the most of them. But electron cooling works done at 1 GeV or even less. It works very fast at low energies. So you have to have a scenario where you make the P-bars and then cool them a little bit, because as you decelerate them, the size of the beam blows up. So then you have to cool them some more to keep them in the machine, or they blow themselves right out. It's a very complicated scenario. But if you look at those early reports, which actually the DOE had accepted with some kind of a fund figure on it, how much money. It was supposed to be, I don't know, maybe $20 million or something like that. But this was Russ's big contribution again to chaos. That got thrown out. And so all of a sudden you'll see a new design report come where electron cooling is thrown out and stochastic cooling is used.
So they took it seriously at that point.
And the price, all of a sudden, of TEV 1 went from $20 million or some number that Leon will give you up to $84 million. It's a big jump. He did the same thing to the source that he did to the Saber. The Saber was supposed to be $20 million, and Leon said he couldn't do it for that when he first came in. So they got that budget straightened out for the first time.
But the jump wasn't that big.
It was, because Bob was building the Saber for 20 or 21
million. Yeah, but then the jump went up to roughly 40.
Yeah, but that's right. But both of these things, the real cost was more, because there were, in the source, the cost, I think, was maybe 80, 85 or something like that. Half of the cost was on, one of those rings is on R&D. So it doesn't show up as equipment. Anyway, John Peoples can give you the sequence of that. He's very good on numbers. I don't know exactly what it did, but the cost of the source went way up. It included B0 and D0 collision faults. My remembrance of that was it was $78.4 million or something like that for that.
We're talking about the doubler now, or the?
The source.
The source. Yeah. Okay, I was talking about the doubler jumped to 40.
The doubler jumped
to roughly 40. The source jumped to
There was a
more.
Whole mess of other things for the experimental areas and stuff that Leon put in, so that.
The doubler is also as much.
The doubler also came up
roughly
with 80. With its rest of its things for around $80 million, too, is my remembrance of things.
Okay, well.
So there, Leon got a real reevaluation of what the costs of these things were and got them out and open. And, you know, that was really great. So the source now starts to get redesigned. And
around where are we now?
Well, that's where we.
We don't know what time.
Some dates. Yeah. We've got to get some dates here to tie things down.
Okay, because none of that's on these things.
Just before Roy comes, or before the Italians join?
I'm not sure.
Okay, there's somewhere. Okay, we'll just have to get it.
Lillian,
yeah.
I think what we should do is stop now.
I have a note for July 81 that says PAC supports appointing a task force to carry out the recommendation of the Tigner Review Committee that the existing PBAR source design be re-examined.
That's 781.
So that's July 81. Okay.
You guys are going to have to get thrown out because we run into another meeting.
Okay.
Let's go.
But can you guys get... it's those dates that we need to type in some...
Okay.
Inward, because I'm my memory isn't good enough to do that.
Okay.
So that's the time when the source starts to get rebuilt.
Okay. So we need to fill in more chronology.
That's really when we start. I think sort of the real phase of CDF. That's when people are starting to take it serious.
Okay.
You have a source. You need a source and you need a detector.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, great. Terrific, thanks.
Okay, now I'm not going to do anything from lunch until my talk.
Okay. Okay, that's great. Okay, so what do we...
Well, you want to talk to him about... This is the Armistice Day shootout as it relates to CDF.
That's the starting, I guess. Okay, so he comes in, and what does he see? And he'll tell us what he sees, and just tell us the story.
He comes in earlier, doesn't he? Earlier than Paul. What does this say about... Okay, 10:78, and then it's the next month that they have the shootout, and then mm-hmm. they firm up the design idea
mm-hmm.
enough for this. Should I take this down there when we go? Because this is, I think, the first mention in the superconducting accelerator design of colliding beams.
Okay.
You might want to read that to get some questions.
Yeah, you should be debunking. Mm-hmm. This comes out when? This comes out in May of 79. Okay, so he's basically already on the scene at that time.
Wilson had resigned in February.
Mm-hmm.
What's he presently upset about with the doubler? That Wilson was not as involved.
He wasn't
with it as you indicate in the paper?
Yeah, at the point when, after he resigns, he stops being involved, he says. And I got other information from somebody. But doesn't matter. It's not that important. Okay.
So then 579, this is... See, Hans said this was a preliminary design report, but they... chose this magnetic detector with a superconducting solenoid, and he said that it was Dave Klein